Good morning. This is TCT Daily Report for Sunday, April 5th, 2026. I'm reading from Boston. In Commerce and Capital this morning, a report with implications that reach well beyond the trading floors and into the operational heart of American military power. The United States possesses roughly 8 weeks of rare earth supplies available for military use, according to a disclosure first published by the South China Morning Post and subsequently amplified by Foreign Policy, Mining.com, and other outlets. 8 weeks. That is, the margin between the Republic's ability to wage precision warfare and the exhaustion of the minerals without which its most advanced weapons cannot be built. The first 36 hours of the American and Israeli campaign against Iran consumed more than 3,000 precision-guided munitions and interceptors, according to an analysis drawing on research from the Colorado School of Mines. Every Tomahawk cruise missile, every JDAM guidance kit, every interceptor launched from an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer contains rare earth permanent magnets: neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, terbium, elements for which China controls approximately 60% of global mining and more than 90% of the refining and separation capacity that converts raw ore into usable material. Beijing imposed export controls on 7 heavy rare earth elements last April and expanded them dramatically in October, with extraterritorial licensing requirements covering any product containing even trace amounts of Chinese-origin rare earths. The South China Morning Post reported that Washington's constrained inventory is expected to dominate discussions when President Trump meets with President Xi Jinping, a meeting already delayed, with Beijing reportedly less eager for a deal than Washington, a negotiating asymmetry that the mineral deficit only deepens. The strategic dependency that policymakers have acknowledged for years is no longer a hypothetical. It is a clock, and it is running. Turning now to the world of arts and letters, and to a story that belongs as much to the history of exploration as to the news of the day. The 4 astronauts of NASA's Artemis II mission are today entering the gravitational dominion of the Moon. The Orion spacecraft, christened Integrity by its crew, is on a precise trajectory toward an April 6th flyby of the lunar far side, a passage that will carry Commander Reid Wiseman, pilot Victor Glover, mission specialist Christina Cook, and Canadian Space Agency astronaut Jeremy Hansen farther from Earth than any human beings have ever traveled. NASA confirmed that the crew began flight day 5 at noon Eastern today, after a scheduled rest period, with the morning devoted to testing the new Orion Crew Survival System spacesuits in the deep space environment for the first time, practicing the speed with which they can don the suits, pressurize them, and strap into their seats. The spacecraft is expected to cross into the Moon's gravitational sphere of influence today, the point at which lunar gravity becomes the dominant force governing Orion's path, though the vehicle will not enter orbit. On Saturday, at crew wake-up, the spacecraft was approximately 169,000 miles from Earth and 110,700 miles from the Moon. Pilot Glover reported to the ground simply that the Earth is quite small and the Moon is definitely getting bigger. It has been more than half a century since Americans last traversed these distances. That they are doing so again is not incidental to the national story. It is central to it. From the Agora this morning, the matter of the president's budget. The fiscal year 2027 proposal, transmitted to Congress on Friday, requests $1.5 trillion in defense spending, alongside a 10% reduction in non-defense discretionary programs. And it demands to be examined not merely as an appropriations document, but as a declaration of national identity in wartime. The numbers are extraordinary. The defense request represents a roughly 42% increase over the current fiscal year, broken into a $1.15 trillion base request, the first time base Pentagon spending has breached the trillion-dollar threshold, and $350 billion channeled through budget reconciliation to bypass a Senate filibuster.
The White House itself declared that the spending level approaches the historic increases just prior to World War II. The proposal includes nearly $66 billion for 34 ships, expanded munitions production to replenish stockpiles depleted by the Iran campaign, and continued investment in the Golden Dome missile defense architecture. On the domestic side, $73 billion in cuts fall with particular severity on the Environmental Protection Agency, down 52%, the National Science Foundation, down 55%, and the Small Business Administration, reduced by 67%. The National Institutes of Health would absorb a $5 billion reduction. The word woke appears 34 times in the 92-page budget document, a rhetorical frequency that illuminates the administration's cultural posture as clearly as any line item reveals its fiscal priorities. Remaining in arts and letters, the consequences of that budget for American science deserve separate and sustained attention. The proposed National Science Foundation budget of $4 billion, down from its current $8.8 billion, would reduce the nation's primary funder of basic research to a scale not seen in decades. The administration would eliminate all funding for the NSF division supporting social sciences and economics, and agency leaders announced Friday they would dissolve the Social, Behavioral, and Economic Sciences Directorate entirely. STEM education programs at NSF would be cut by 86%, from $1.1 billion to $151 million, a figure that, if enacted, would devastate the pipeline of trained researchers upon which American technological leadership depends. Two areas the administration favors, artificial intelligence and quantum computing, would receive nearly a quarter of the reduced total. Meanwhile, a government-wide prohibition on using federal funds for academic journal subscriptions and publishing fees would sever researchers from the literature that sustains their work. The NIH would lose approximately $5 billion. Lawmakers have signaled they are unlikely to enact these reductions as written, but the direction of intent is unmistakable. A republic choosing to concentrate its intellectual resources as narrowly as it is concentrating its military ones. And finally, from the world of arts and letters, the American Art Museum endured a punishing year in 2025 and emerged, according to the Art Newspaper's annual survey of the world's 100 most visited institutions, battered but not broken. The most dramatic losses trace to two distinct calamities. In Los Angeles, the January Palisades fire forced the Getty Villa to close for roughly 6 months, sending attendance down nearly 60%. On the opposite coast, the record 43-day federal government shutdown last autumn shuttered the Smithsonian Complex and the National Gallery of Art during peak visitation. The National Gallery lost more than a quarter of its audience. The National Portrait Gallery and the Smithsonian American Art Museum saw crowds reduced to near half their pre-COVID levels, losses the Art newspaper attributed not solely to the shutdown, but to broader institutional turbulence, including disputes with the administration over programming and high-level resignations. Yet the privately governed institutions told a different story. The nation's largest independent museums continued their post-pandemic recovery, with several reaching historic attendance. The lesson is not subtle. Public institutions dependent on federal funding and federal goodwill proved vulnerable in ways their private counterparts did not. The resilience of the American Museum as an idea remains formidable. Its resilience as a public institution is being tested. That is TCT Daily Report for Sunday, April 5th, 2026. The Commonwealth Times. Pro Republica Edificamus.